Good morning and welcome to Reading with Robin on this Saturday morning at 1-866-920-9455. You can find me at readingwithrobin.com, and here every Saturday morning, streaming live at 920 WHJJ.com. Right now, I'm very excited to have in studio, you've never been here before, Ellen, right?
No, this is my first time here.
You sound like Dr. Ellen Kenner.
Oh, do I really?
The Rational Basis of Happiness. Let me give you a proper intro. You are a licensed clinical psychologist with a private practice in Rhode Island and host, as we said, of the nationally syndicated radio talk show, The Rational Basis of Happiness. You can go to drkenner.com for all the listings. And your specialty is exploring how to apply the rational pro-happiness philosophy of Ayn Rand's. So there's some, everybody focus. This was like a lot of learning. This was a great learning experience. I haven't read Ayn Rand in a long time.
Yeah.
Didn't get to reread. I know when we were on the phone, I promised maybe.
Yeah. It's a big reread.
It's a big reread. I read it last. Imagine somebody saying
it's not a short story.
Can you imagine somebody saying that too? I picked it up last night and I finished it.
Yeah, I know. I know somebody who I think read it in two. They just never went to sleep.
Wow.
They read it all the way through, and maybe it was 2 days or so.
Wow. But they have other issues going on?
It just grabbed them that much. It's a powerful, powerful book.
It's amazing, though, when you get a book, and of course on Reading with Robin, we chat books all the time, and certainly with fiction, with nonfiction, whatever person's loving, when you have that immediate attraction to a book and you cannot put it down and write in, you're just, 2 days is probably a little excessive, Dr. Kenner, correct?
Oh, yeah. For that book, it's over 1,000 pages.
Gone with the Wind, think I read like that.
A book I never wanted to end.
Yeah, see, that's an amazing thing. And we'll talk about your book, but also, so people should go to drkenner.com, and we're here to talk about The Selfish Path. I love this title, True Romance, and how to love with passion and reason. And we should also, your co-author.
And my co-author is Dr. Ed Locke, and he is one of the most published psychologists in industrial organizational psychology and in goal setting, basically goal setting. So he's applied it to romance.
I guess. So that's a goal. It's a great goal.
He is amazing. He's been a clinician also.
So now how did the two of you connect on the book?
I gave courses at Objectivist conferences countrywide for maybe a decade or so. And I used to attend his classes, and he gave one on romance. I gave three on romance, courting success in romance and preserving and strengthening your marriage. And when he listened to mine, he approached me after the class and he said, would you like to write a book together?
Wow.
And I was just, he was one of the people who helped me change my life. And not directly, but just I heard one of his courses opened up decades ago. He opened it up with some words from a Crystal Gayle song. I'd never heard of Crystal Gayle.
I think she's singing in Rhode Island tomorrow.
Oh, is she really?
I think there's a fair, and I remember thinking, Crystal Gayle. I remember that hair,
Oh, I don't even know who she is.
Singer, country singer, yeah.
But the words were, I could go to Paris at my beck and call. Why do I go through life with nothing at all? Mm-hmm. And then there are some words, and again, I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember it exactly, but when I dream of you. Maybe someday my dreams will come true.
Mm-hmm.
And those words, he used those words, and it just gave me this rush of, I want more in life. And to be able to write a book with him was just an incredible ride. It was just wonderful to, we have very different styles, so that's always hard.
Well, I was going to ask you, how do you do that, manage that with a book, and what is the process? Did you meet up together? All of it was, sent back and forth, Word documents?
We probably have thousands upon thousands upon thousands of emails.
I'll bet.
Each of them have the different chapters. We worked on this for 8.5 years.
Wow.
Every word is thoughtful. Every word we went over and over. Examples. It was a much longer book, probably double the size.
Wow.
And at one pass, we had an editor come in and they took out 18 of my cases. 19, I think. And but it's so good. I love the book. I am so glad that we put at different times, when you're writing, at different times you I wouldn't have liked the final ending. This one is so streamlined. We get to the essence of what makes for a phenomenal romantic relationship. And I understood it some more. Of course, I'm always, the person writing the book is the first beneficiary of
it. Sure, sure.
And
selfish
just,
of you, but yes.
So, yes, and we should talk about the word selfish a bit.
Absolutely.
Because that,
we're going to take a break. But
okay.
I know there's so much that's very fascinating about that. What does that evoke
the
when you hear selfish?
Path to romance.
So we're going to talk more with Dr. Ellen Kenner, and I will be back. The selfish path to romance. And I'm back with Chapter 2. You're tuned into Reading with Robin on this Saturday morning. My guest is Dr. Ellen Kenner. She's in studio with me, and it's fun. We do a lot of phone interviews, but it's really fun to have you in studio.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you for coming in. The Selfish Path to Romance, How to Love with Passion and Reason, co-authored. We were speaking with you about your fabulous co-author, and what an honor, Edwin Locke. We should say good morning, because this will be posted on the website.
Oh, wonderful. So he'll be able to hear it.
Yes, hey, he'll be able to hear it. And so it's great. And selfish, because I remember when I got the email from your sister, and she was telling me about the book. And sister, one of your biggest fans. I mean, she loved the book, and it was really nice to connect on that. And it was an intriguing title. So
it's a provocative title.
Yes.
Because typically people think of the word selfish as basically the person who's manipulative, the narcissist, the me only person, my way or the highway, and I'll take what I want, and I'll run roughshod over you. And what Ayn Rand did, the book is based on the ideas of the author Ayn Rand. She wrote The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged, and she wrote a nonfiction book, The Virtue of Selfishness. Virtue.
Oh, yeah.
And what she explained was that if you want to love your life, then the first person to love and to make lovable, because you're in charge of your own character, is yourself. And she talks about romantic love, and one of the lines from The Fountainhead is, to say I love you, you first need to say the I.
Yes, I saw that. That was a nice quote in
right.
the book. Yeah,
because
it makes sense, but I don't think it's, and a lot of things that do make sense when you read them or you really stop to think about them, you just don't think about it because it seems opposite to what you would think.
Well, it's what we've all been told.
Right.
The selfish person is the mean person. The selfish person is the bad person. But let me show you the problem. If you live selflessly in the shadows of others, what happens? If you're doing everything for your husband, everything for the PTA, everything for your kids, everything for your neighbors, everything for the community, everything for everybody else, who is left out of the equation?
Certainly.
You burn out and you build resentment. And instead of doing those things lovingly, benevolently, because they are your values, you're doing it sacrificially. The minute you get into sacrificing yourself and driving yourself by duty, I should, I've got to, I ought to, I have to, I must, I need to, then it's not your life anymore. You feel like you just want it to rain or something, so you don't have to do the picnic. You just want to have a spot of time for yourself. And I've seen so many couples that come in. Typically, it's the wife, the 1950s wife. But many times, it happens all the time. They come in and they are bitter.
Sure.
I've done everything for everyone else my whole life. What about me? And I say, well, what would you love? And it's sometimes,
do they even know?
Too late. That's too selfish. That's what we're fighting.
Yeah, it's interesting.
If you can value yourself and make yourself into a good person with honesty, good traits, honesty, integrity, be passionate about what you love in life, and never step on anyone else, then you're going to earn self-esteem, self-worth, self-respect. Selfish just means concerned with your own interests. It doesn't mean that you run roughshod over people.
Right. It's sort of, I think that word's gotten lost, and I think about all the things when, you sort of add ish to something.
Right.
We'll meet at noon ish. So it's self-ish.
You look
at it sort of a different way.
We're fighting the other word, which is otherism, where you can't own your own life, where you're only a good person if you become a martyr.
Well, I was going to say the martyr.
The martyr, and that's called otherism, altruism. And we think of that as the benevolent person, but actually the person who is rationally selfish is happy and they're much more benevolent than the doormat who's bitter or who's depressed, or the narcissist who's a me-only person. So yeah, that's why we named it.
It's a fabulous, and like you say, all going back to Ayn Rand's teachings and even the nonfiction book about
being the virtue of selfishness. Right.
And so another one, and that's one of the things I love about this show, doing the show, is that a lot of times a writer will talk about the other books that have inspired them. So not only do you get to talk about your book, right, The Selfish Path to Romance, How to Love with Passion and Reason, but then you get the additional reading. And actually, do you have additional reading in here, do you, or no?
Oh, throughout
the book. There's footnotes all over.
Footnotes. I have read so many self-help books, and there are many, many, many good ones. And we mention them throughout the book, and
so you can get
my
a lot
co-author
of
has too.
Yeah, so there's a lot of reading. And I think that's what's great about reading. It just spurs on more reading. And you know, you might want to go check something or say, oh, wow, that looks like, you know, that footnote came from this source. This looks like a really interesting. Of course, that's after you've finished Dr. Alan Kenner's book. Then you go on to more reading. But there's just so much, as I was reading and when we were talking and I was on your website, and you think about people in your own families or if you're listening now. And if you have questions, this is a great time. If you'd like, if not, Ellen and I are happy to keep going, certainly. 1-866-920-9455, and we are giving away copies of the book, The Selfish Path to Romance. Just thinking about people in the family, and you know, and you can hear those words, everything you sort of said, you know, this sense of I'm doing for everybody. And I know sometimes when people sort of that's their MO, you know, they're always doing. And I think, what's the agenda? What are they really getting? Because sometimes people, they just need to be needed, you know, when they're out there joining everything and doing everything. I don't know how altruistic it looks like that, but it smells like that, but it doesn't really read.
Right. It's one of the hardest things not to betray yourself.
Yeah.
And to do the thinking, what do I love in life? And there are only a few areas in life that are the top values. One of them is what you do every day of your life, your career. And many people just coast through life with a job they don't like. Now, in this economy, some people may be absolutely happy to have a job that they're coasting through and they make the best of it, and that's what you need to do. But if you can set wider goals for yourself and dream, let yourself dream and let yourself see what you would love for a career. The second area is romance, or having a partner, someone who sees in you the best, what you see in yourself, and you see that in that person, and to learn how to both make yourselves individually lovable and learning how to cherish each other and keep it going beyond the dating period, beyond
the honeymoon phase,
right? How do you preserve a romance over decades so that you don't wake up and say I love you, but it really means I'm used to you? You don't want that. You want to be able to keep it alive. And people think they can go on automatic and it will just happen. And oh, that's so wrong. There's so much effort, but effort doesn't mean a negative, put into keeping a romance vibrant. And that's what you want to learn how to do. And that's what we talk about in the book.
What about if the person that says, like you were saying, the economy is so tough and people are coasting through jobs that they don't like and they have all sorts of issues going, and I know first it all starts with taking care of yourself or nothing else gets done or nobody's happy, you know, if mama's not happy, I mean, whatever that saying goes, and these are things that really we grew up hearing, you know, that you need to take care of yourself. And I was always, you know, we sort of took should out of the vocabulary. You could, you know, we always sort of replace should with could, and when you really sort of, it's an awareness, but when that is the last thing one can even imagine, and so then all these other elements come in, people are, you know, doing all sorts of things to sort of take their minds off of what's going on, and they're really not getting, you know, for that person that says, this sounds very luxurious, I don't have time to think about myself. I mean, you don't have time not to, but
people
that are just overwhelmed.
What you're doing. When you feel like you're living for everyone else, even your kids feel like a duty, even your visiting your parents feel like a duty. When you allow yourself to live for yourself, then hopefully you had kids because you love them and they become not a duty, but your cherished value. And you do from them from a different mindset. You truly nourish them and nurture them, not because you're sacrificing, but because you love them. And the same with visiting your parents. If you love them, you will enjoy what you love in them. But not every relative gets a free pass.
Yeah, and that's a very interesting...
You need to know how to be good to yourself that way. And with your partner, you can't let kids and relatives break the primary bond. If you're always living for everyone else, then that's one of the major problems, relationship breakers, actually.
A big deal breaker. And so that's never, I would think, is it ever too late? Is it ever, do you ever see a relationship and think, wow, I really wish I'd seen this couple or this family years ago, but now?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes, I mean, especially when you've ruptured the relationship with an affair. But we talk about how to prevent that. We even talk about affair proofing. We don't name it that way.
Well, let's talk about, we're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
Reading with Robin continues on Talk Radio 920 WHJJ.
My guest this morning is Dr. Ellen Kenner, co-author of The Selfish Path to Romance, How to Love with Passion and Reason. And thank you very much, Lisa, for patiently holding. Welcome to the show. And it's very nice of me to share the microphone with you, Lisa.
I know, I agree, because maybe it was fate that, you know, I woke up today and put the show on first thing, because that's so true what she's talking about.
Yeah,
one thing you do have to learn is to learn how to love yourself again, because as you grow older and life, you know, becomes more crazy, and with your job and responsibilities, you forget about you.
Right.
And then,
right.
Like she said, you do, you become, you know, resentful or you know, desiring something that, you know, you can have.
You know, Lisa, this is Ellen. What I recommend is to have almost a resentment meter inside you. And I do that with myself. The minute I feel my resentment building even a little bit, I know I need to talk to my husband right away. Because if you can nip it in the bud, that's one of the skills in the book. If you can talk about it early on, you can prevent that from building and building. And what happens? It builds and builds and builds, and you say, I just don't want to say anything. What's the use? Why bother? And then you explode. And then you feel so darn guilty that you exploded because it's not me. I'm a nice person. And you backtrack. So if you can think of it as a resentment meter, and the minute you feel the first feeling of a resentment, figure out an assertive way to speak to your hubby.
Okay.
It sounds great, doesn't it, Lisa? I mean, it makes sense.
You know, it's true, because then next thing you know, you're holding everything in.
Sure.
And then
something else.
The tiniest little.
And then somebody leaves a glass on the counter.
Day, it's probably not a big deal. And then you just explode.
Yeah. Let me give you a quick example of that. My husband and I went on a vacation skiing up north. I'm not a skier, but, you know, this is when we were younger. We went up. He begged me to come out and ski, and I preferred to sit by the fireplace, the lodge, and just read a book. But he was so excited about it, and I thought, well, if we went down the easy ski path, Brookside, I could do that, or Brookway. And so he agreed to that. He brought me to the top of the mountain. Meanwhile, I'm a beginner skier. He brought me to the top of the mountain, and he was so supportive. You know, he stayed right with me. And then we got to a certain point, and he said to me, I'm going to take the death trail. It wasn't called that. But he's going to go down there. Let's take that. This is an easy trail. Right. I looked at it. It terrified me. And I said, I thought we were going on Brookway. And he said, well, I'll meet you at the bottom. I went down to the bottom of the trail. He took off, and I'm feeling resentful now. I cannot believe I could have been reading a book. He went off on his own. And I get down to the bottom of the mountain, and he's not there. And I wait and wait. And every moment I'm waiting, I'm getting more and more
furious.
Resentful. Ooh. And he finally comes and meets me. He goes, how you doing? And I'm ready to explode. And this is supposed to be a romantic weekend, too. You think we're going to have any romance that night? And I said to him, you know, I am so upset. I took that path down to be company for you, and we got to the bottom, and you weren't there. And he said, "Oh, I completely forgot about you. I went on the gondola again." And he said, "I am so sorry." He said, "We'll go again." He was so incredibly loving, aww, and it was so endearing. And I didn't hold it in, and we had a wonderfully romantic weekend.
Yeah, that's the trick, Lisa. And I think one of the things Ellen says that resonates with me so much is the rational. It's the rational part. Because when you do nip things in the bud, it is more, you know, at the time, you don't want things to linger. I'm
right,
a list maker.
Right.
You know, I can tend to make lists. And then sometimes people will say, well, where'd that come from? That came out of nowhere. And it never comes out of nowhere. I'm thinking about it. But
right.
And sometimes you can't nip things exact, you know, timing, time and place.
Or your mood, you need to get, you might
really
have to
rational.
Take a break. But it's all,
makes
if
sense.
You really are thoughtful about your relationship, and if you know skills, you can't go without skills. It's like trying to become a chef without any skills. If you learn how to speak your own mind without attacking the other person's character, you are armed for life. Because you can talk about anything negative without hurting the person, and you both can learn how to resolve issues. It's not easy to learn it because it's, you know, it's, you're used to the way you were brought up.
Well, I was going to say that you're saying it's skills, but how many people, there's so many things that we do learn, but mostly I would think people model what they grew up with, right?
Or they rebel against it.
Either way.
I don't want to be
right.
like my parents.
Either way, back or
right.
forth.
But
right.
But we essentialize everything in the book. We get to the core issues, and we make it a very interesting read where you just keep saying, aha,
uh-huh.
Now I understand myself
well,
better.
Well, yeah, Lisa, I'm going to let Ellen continue, and I want to thank you. I will send you a copy of the book. You'll really enjoy
thank
it.
I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks for calling. Hope to see you on the 21st, Lisa. I potted her down. So now all she's saying is, yes, Robin, yes, I will be there on September 21st for your evening with authors. And that's, you do break the book down. It's very readable. And there's
right.
so much that
right.
You do read and you say yes, but it's being aware. And these are things that not everybody is aware
right.
of, nor there's so much to learn. And but it just makes so much sense.
Right, right.
Thus the rational. So, and I was telling you off air, we do a lot in 3 minutes off air
right.
about choosing the right partner.
Right.
That was one of my favorites. And, you know, people get married all sorts of times in their lives, all sorts of reasons. And as you were saying earlier, there's that honeymoon phase and everything is great. And I've heard of couples, they're dating and they're going through counseling. I mean, if you're having issues then, Or things always, you
right.
know what I mean? I think that's very interesting.
Well, it's very hard to mesh two individuals with different interests, different tastes, different family of origin, backgrounds, different preferences, different habits. It's so hard to weave two lives together. So if they're going to counseling and it's productive, if they're doing it more like premarital counseling and they're learning the skills, they're learning how to work together as a couple and build even a couple's style of intimacy of sex. I mean, because couples, that usually drops off very early on.
And it's often the butt of a joke, right? How many TV sitcoms,
how
many movies, how many, you know, it becomes the yuck, yuck, yuck.
But, oh,
and
right,
why, and
right.
why is that? And I
the
think
the cover of Newsweek, a few, maybe, 10 years ago was No Sex Dare, or No Sex Please, We're Married. And you see a couple sitting on the bed looking away from each other.
Yeah. And then people, obviously, they go elsewhere. I mean, that, you know, is there...
Well, they're hungry for the feelings of emotional intimacy. And it's not just sexual intimacy, because it's something dry. I mean, you can enjoy it. Even by yourself, but but it's not the same.
She's so
as
delicate, Dr. Ellen.
Feeling so emotion, feeling connected to the person on the deepest level, and feeling like they truly cherish you, they get you, and you want to be with that person. You love that person. You can laugh with that person, and you can feel the most intense pleasure you could ever feel with that person too. And that's very hard to keep going over decades.
So and that's often what happens.
And we
that's
talk
what,
about that
right.
in the book.
And you do. Yeah, and actually we were talking off air. So maybe run people through like what they can expect, because I do have a lot of questions, but I'd rather listen to the way you
talk
about it.
I'll just give a quick overview. The book is The Selfish Path to Romance, and that's valuing yourself. It doesn't mean become a doormat. It doesn't mean run roughshod over other people. We talk about the basics. What is romantic love? We give a little bit of the history of it, that it's fairly new on the scene. I mean, women were treated it as chattel in early Rome, and then you had the whole Christian era where sex was supposed to be just ethereal, and you don't do any platonic love where you don't do anything, and if you were a virgin, you were great, and if not, then you were a hussy or whatnot. But we talk about the basics. What is love? Then we move into, how do you make yourself lovable? Hey man, people don't think about that.
No.
You don't think about making your own character. You think that your personality is what it is, and you don't realize that every choice you make builds character. And if you lie, if you engage in little white lies or the big whoppers, then you're not building self-esteem, you're undermining yourself. But if you build core virtues, and of course we use the virtues that Ayn Rand has identified, honesty and integrity, being productive, thinking for yourself, having a good sense of justice, and earning pride, not boastful pride of the narcissist, but earning pride. And you never use physical force, you never initiate physical force against anyone. Of course, you can use it in self-defense. Then we talk about how to develop self-esteem, and also things like valuing your appearance. It doesn't mean you have to show off or have a nice laid-back day, but if you're always going around smelly and greasy-haired and you're not valuing your body. Your body is yourself. So you want to enjoy stylizing yourself. Maybe you're a laid-back person. Maybe you like to dress up a little bit. You don't want to be phony. You want to be true to yourself. So that's another section. A third section is, how do you find your soulmate?
Yeah,
some people say soulmates don't exist or you just got lucky, but that's not the case. If you thoughtfully date and learn how to introspect what you're seeing in a person, then you're much more likely to hit the jackpot. It's not that you're hitting the jackpot, it's that you're earning a good romantic bond. Then the last sections are how to make your relationship thrive over the decades and how to enjoy sex. We have a whole section on that. Women need to be self-valuing. I mean, some women have it come very easily, but there are some discrepancies. And typically I hear the woman saying that I could live without it.
You hear that a lot. Did you read Meg Wolitzer's The Uncoupling was a fiction?
No.
It was out this spring. And there was also The Summer Without Men. That was out this summer. I can't pronounce the author's. But there's that, that I think it came from, the Meg Wolitzer's The Uncoupling. It was from Lysistrata. Whatever that play is. But anyway, that kind of idea. But it was, and Meg, I saw speak in New York, and she said the book sort of took off from some woman saying, well, I'm sort of all done with all that.
Yeah.
That kind of.
Right. Or one woman said, oh my gosh, that damn candle. Every time the husband lit a candle, she knew she had to have sex. You want to avoid that, and our book helps with that.
Yeah, we don't want to burn anything down. So we'll be back with Chapter 4, Ellen Kenner and I, The Selfish Path to Romance, How to Love with Passion and Reason. You can go to drellenkenner.com, and you can go to readingwithrobin.com for more information about all of this fun stuff, and Twitter. And I'm back with Chapter 4, the fourth and final chapter of the show that goes all too quickly, Reading with Robin on this Saturday morning. We're taking calls at 1-866-920-9455. Actually, we don't have much time, but we do have copies of The Selfish Path to Romance, How to Love with Passion and Reason. Dr. Ellen Kenner is my guest this morning, co-author, along with Edwin Locke, who will listen to this later West Coast time. And we can go to visit your site at drkenner.com.
Right.
And also, I don't know if Dr. Ellen Kenner will find out about that.
Oh, you might and selfishromance.com.
Selfishromance.com, right, and they're connected.
And you can get it at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Everywhere. And are you doing it? Do you have any events coming up in Rhode Island?
I don't have any events. We're actually doing internet work right now.
And the blog, do you do like blog tours?
I haven't done that. I have looked into that. Maybe after the show, I'll ask you a few questions about that.
It seems like that's a really good way to get the word out. And certainly you can go to drkenner.com and find out all of your podcasts are up there, and then and where you broadcast from.
It's the rational basis of happiness.
Yeah.
Right.
I always enjoyed listening to that. I said that. It's like
that's
a familiar
wonderful.
Voice and a good memory of, listening and thinking. I used to listen in non. Yeah, she's correct. That makes sense.
Thank you. Thank
that
you,
makes sense.
You.
It's fun. Rational. And so we were talking again, like I said, so much happens in between the segments, the skill building, and there are so many things that are not taught that are so much more important to me than things that are taught.
Right.
I mean, we know this, and things that are just to be able to maneuver through your life more easily and not have everything be so difficult, and all of the relationships we have in our lives and which ones are worth maintaining, and sometimes it is time to cut them loose. You know, I'm not talking so flippantly about a partner, certainly, but just in general, relationships that are just sort of there.
You need to ask, what is the benefit? What am I enjoying in this person? What character traits do they have? And if a person is not lovable, or if they're a burden to you, assuming it's not your kid, because you can't walk away.
Right. No, there's
it's your goal civilize them and to help them to help them love themselves, essentially. But if it's not working out, there is no duty to have to spend your precious moments, your time, your life, your energy, your money, your emotional sanity with somebody who is always dragging you down. And if you're thinking of parting ways, because it's a romance book, we put it in as an appendix, but we have a nine-step path to take, to a thinking path that very lays out how to part ways if you cease being soulmates and start over again and find a romance that works better. You know, learn from it. And it's much better than what typically happens.
I was just going to say, right, in the best of both worlds, you think amicably and rationally, but there's so much emotion and people cutting body parts off and all sorts of craziness.
Right. But that's the whole goal. We have a whole section on conflict resolution, because there isn't a couple in the world that hasn't said, no, I don't want to go out tonight. Why do we have to go out? Or that doesn't have some differences, some conflict.
Sure.
I don't want to live in this place. I don't like this neighborhood. And I do. And I don't want to bring up the kids this way. How do you resolve conflicts in ways that don't get to the core and attack each other's character? That's so stupid. Why would you think that? That's not good. If you say, you know, I'm curious, help me understand you better. Why do you want to live in this neighborhood? Or why do you want sex that way, if we get into intimacy? But, you know,
waning moment she brings that up. This is the show after the show. Say whatever you want. That's okay. Yeah. No, but it's the conflicts and the... there are people that are argumentative all day long, right? It's exhausting to be around.
And it's exhausting to be them.
And it's exhausting to be, yeah. And then, but there are ways around that.
There are wonderful communication skills. One we talked about, nip the problems in the bud. Another one is essential. And that's the difference between finger-pointing language, you always do this, you never do this, and that global language, never and always, but you, and attacking the person's character versus what's called the pronoun I language. You know, I'm feeling hurt, I'm upset. Then the person will inquire, hey, what did I do? Or what's going on? Why are you feeling that way? You can talk about yourself using I language. I expect this, I hurt, and without ever attacking the other person, and it totally liberates you. It's called assertiveness skills, and we've got a whole section on.
You cover everything.
There's
so much in this book, and I wish we could cover all of it, but you know we never can. So people can go to drkenner.com for more information, and also to selfishromance.com, and it's The Selfish Path to Romance: How to Love with Passion and Reason. But go visit Ellen's site, and you can listen to some of the podcasts, and you take questions there. Right?
Oh,
we're talking about email.
I get emails. I get it from all over the world. I will get people from the Mideast saying, I'm being forced to marry somebody. I don't love this person. What do I do? I mean, I don't always showcase that those on the show.
Sure.
But, you know, it's very interesting. You just see that there are the same problems.
I was going to say, has anything really changed?
People want the essence of romance, and that's emotional intimacy, feeling loved, cherished, and cared for on the deepest level, loving in you what you love in yourself. And you both can be works in progress where you're helping each other improve.
So you can change.
I mean,
do you really?
Because,
you know, this is how I am, and I can't change. I mean, I've heard that.
But they don't want to change because it's effortful. I mean, any top value, in especially self-esteem, takes thought and effort, and you also need to learn how to introspect, to think about what's going on in your mind.
Well, it's certainly easier to point, like you were saying.
Extrospection is very much easier than introspection.
Yeah, sure, it's the easier path, right? And that's and there's so many, I can only imagine, like you were saying, you get questions from all over the world, and just, you know, what people really want, what makes a fulfilling life, doesn't change, you know, wherever you live, wherever the time period.
It's universal.
There are
universal values, even though cultures differ.
Sure.
That doesn't mean a person trapped in a culture where there are arranged marriages is happy in that. They may not know the difference, and that may protect them a little bit, but if they see a contrast or allow their minds to think and not just obey or go by an authority, if they are independent at all, they're going to not be happy. And the goal is, that's why I have the radio show, The Rational Basis of Happiness.
I know. It just makes so much sense. And people can go to drkenner.com for more information about The Rational Basis of Happiness. And do you ever get an email and think, I better forward this to like some, kind of police station?
Oh,
in their
I did
area.
Once. I did once. It almost ruined a trip to Tanglewood that our kids had prepared, because when I called the police, someone was losing it.
Yeah,
they said,
I can imagine.
The state police said, you need to be down here
wow.
right now. And they found the person.
Oh, good.
And they went to the door, knocked on the person's door, and the person wrote back to me, I was only kidding. Oh, well.
Really?
I don't know if they were only kidding. Well,
No, probably not. It was probably a cry for help. But, you know, there's such a response.
I think they were scared.
Sure. And there's such a responsibility there.
They were threatening. But I was so impressed with the Rhode Island State Police.
Well, shout out for the Rhode Island. They're not just pulling you over because you're texting.
Cool. They did amazing research. I loved that experience.
Yeah, I could only imagine the because people are so honest. Maybe in an email, it's not a face to face. They can really write with their
research. Oh yeah, yes.
So
yes.
They're really writing, and there's a lot of cries,
emails.
Right, for help and for frustration
romantic
and
unhappiness. Much, and on our unhappiness with yourself, because as we
that's really where
earlier,
it stems.
As that was Ayn Rand's quote, to say I love you, one must first be able to say the I.
The I. And it's good. And it's, you know, I love the sort of self-ish.
Oh,
that's how I sort of say self now. That's not going to make me think. Self-ish.
Right. It's not running roughshod. It's having self-esteem.
Really, to really think about that. Really give that one some thought. And check out the website again, drkenner.com. It's really fascinating. Selfishromance.com. If you want more information, you can always email me, Robin, at readingwithrobin.com.